Here's a quick self-awareness update. I forgot to frame this entire podcast without mentioning that the entire posse mentality that is behind America's obsession with vigilantism has everything to do with slaveholders and slave owners and slave enslavement societies hunting down enslaved people in order to exact revenge and vengeance and so forth based on behaviors that are arbitrary and generally not based on real crimes or real unlawfulness. It's just an excuse to use a general insult as a way of hunting down and stringing people up. In this case, enslaved people, Native American people, Mormons even, Mexicans, and other peoples who were antithetical to the white Western overthrow of North America by Spaniards, and then by the British, and then by naturalized white Americans, etc., etc., etc. As the West was won and the South was won, etc., it was based upon a kind of mob mentality, a kind of civilian posse-based justice, violent justice, that did not consider people of color, enslaved people, indigenous people, or brown people, including, you know, Mexicans, Chinese, and so forth. Anybody who could be othered could be accused of a crime, hunted down, jailed, beat, strung up, hung, tortured, or just killed with a gun or a machete or whatnot. So I want to bring attention to the fact that after I posted this, I had a flood of self-awareness and wanted to address that before I went into a more comic book Western sort of white American narrative of heroic vengeance and a heroic vigilantism, and not include the fact that I believe the entire DNA of American vigilantism is based on hunting down human possessions or people who don't belong here and raising them making them even worse, making them a making them an example for others. And I just wanted to get that in right away as a caveat that I, in fact, am not stupid and not thoughtless and not ignoring historical perspective. So I hope that this helps flesh out the entire programming that we as Americans have received, and it is based on a multi-generational, epigenetic, historical basis upon stealing and taking and stealing and taking a land, and any time that didn't work the way we wanted, exacting vengeance and revenge. And by we, I mean the dominant culture, and by the dominant culture, I mean the Western culture, and by the Western culture, I mean white people. I mean, my people come from Ireland and Hungary and didn't get here until the 20th century. So they're not my people who did this. But I will allow myself not to play that game, and I will say I am a cisgender white man and am part, through my education and training and entitlement, I am part of that that corpus, that identity. Anyway, I hope that helped. I did this way before I got any negative feedback, so hope that means something. Not an idiot. Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, I am an idiot, but I was able to think this all the way through, and I never do that with any of my podcasts, but This is important. Mahalo. Before I begin, I want to be clear. The entire theme of this episode is that the ruling that Kyle Rittenhouse is not guilty on all charges will, in fact, embolden both the left and the right in the future, because the Rittenhouse verdict is going to set precedence with regards to who, what, when, where, why, and how you can be in a public space armed, and whether or not you can defend yourself, even if you're perceived as provoking or being provocative, and whatever that means. And the rest of the episode is based on that. However, it really focuses on the concept of America always being a pro-vigilante country. And as a result, when the mainstream media talks about vigilantism as being some sort of bizarre thing, America has been programmed to support lawless righteousness, going around the law in order to exact vengeance, as something sexy and heroic for at least 400 years. Especially when it comes to the Wild West, especially when it comes to modern gun-fu movies like John Wick, Deadpool, etc. So, here we go. Lots of love. Talk to you soon. Season 3, Episode 4, Chris Cast. My name's Chris Abraham. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Chris Cass, Season 3, Episode 4, Anti-Vigilantism, or Anti-Vigilantism. However, I hear it all the time is Anti-Vigilantism, or Pro-Vigilantism, or Vigilantism. But when I looked it up, apparently the word is Vigilantism. Vigilantism. Anyway, we're going to talk about vigilantism in the wake of the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict, which was completely innocent of all counts. And while I'm not going to go into much moral or ethical response, I am going to talk about what I know about defensive law. I am not a lawyer, and I will also talk about what a vigilante is and why America and the world, but mostly America, has been incredibly pro-vigilante since before the advent of the comic book, and we'll go into the ubiquitous nature of the vigilante as defined well outside who you might think would be the vigilante in this narrative, which would be, you know, the Joker in the movie, and the Punisher in his series of comic books and movies. They're not the only ones. Most of your heroes are vigilantes. Most of them are not law enforcement officials, and even law enforcement officials are not allowed to mete out vigilante justice. We'll come back to this after the break, but that is pretty much my TLDR. Too long, didn't read synopsis. I'm going to try to do them all this way so that you can just stop now and move on to the next podcast. Ciao. Welcome back. This is Chris Cast, Season 3, Episode 4, on vigilantism, on vigilantes, on Virgil Antes, on Vigil. I guess Vigil Antes are your mother's sisters when they go to Mass on Sunday, right? Vigil Antes. Anyway. Dad joke alert. Should have trigger warning before that. So, Kyle Rittenhouse has been a huge topic of conversation. And he is just, if you will, in many cases, he is just a symbol. He is just an archetype. He is just a red herring, maybe. He is a manifestation of what... all is wrong according to the left, and everything that's right according to the right. So, as you might well know, Kyle Rittenhouse was armed, 17, and in the periphery of a post peaceful protest riot. And from the beginning of the day, that day until all the excitement happened, he was hanging out with his bunch of militarized buddies, supposedly protecting private property, car lots and so forth, that had already been rioted and looted and destroyed the night before. So there was very little for them to do that night. They were basically there, and I will agree on the left in that, they were basically there as a line in the sand, as a stake in the ground to say no more. And that is easily that can be perceived as being, I guess, aggressive. That is an aggressive act, to stand around with shotguns, with pump shotguns and rifles and bolt action rifles and AR-15s and even AR-15 pistols, and body armor. Nothing happened during the protests. I assume that they were there all day. The official story, not the lie story that's on the media, but the true story is that his buddy, who's 18, bought him with his money, with Kyle's money, bought him an AR-15, a full-length non-SBR, non-AOW, non-pistol AR-15, semi-automatic sporting rifle, and then kept it in that 18-year-old purchaser's gun safe that was owned by his dad in Kenosha, Wisconsin. So at no time did anybody cross state lines with firearms. In no times did the Kenosha kid possess that firearm unlawfully in Illinois. Everybody's talking about crossing borders, border crossing, crossing with guns. Strangely enough, Wisconsin is a lot freer of a gun rights state than Illinois is. Rural Illinois, maybe less so than Chicago, but everybody knows that Wisconsin is a quote freer state than Illinois is. So by crossing borders from Illinois into Wisconsin, he was actually crossing into much more gun-friendly land than he would be in Illinois. Now, gun ownership is not residency based. It is location based. While you cannot purchase a firearm, well, no, you. And here's the thing: you cannot. I don't think you can buy pistols in a neighboring state, but I believe that you can buy rifles in a neighboring state. In Virginia, when I was buying pistols, I couldn't go to West Virginia or Maryland or DC or wherever, Tennessee, Kentucky, to buy a pistol. I had to either buy it here at a local gun store, or I had to buy it, let's say, in Maryland at a Dick's or at a another sporting goods store. I would have to buy it there, but then have it transferred from the store to a gun broker, a gun reseller, a licensed gun reseller. It's called a FFL license, Federal Firearms License. So people in Virginia who have an FFL can buy and sell firearms. They can also broker deals across the postal system and between states. So if I buy one in Maryland, I will have it transferred via UPS or FedEx to someone in Virginia, such as another Dick's Sporting Good, or to an FFL, who could be a private citizen or someone who works in a gun store or whatever. So, the concept of crossing state lines with the firearm has a lot of importance in places like if I were to go from Virginia, where I can have guns all over my car, actually only as a concealed carry owner, but let's say as a regular owner with a rifle, I could have a rifle in a gun rack in the back of my pickup. I can have it in my trunk or whatever. But if I go into Maryland or DC, I have to secure those firearms. I have to separate the ammunition from the firearm. I have to put the firearm into a locked box. I don't know if this is true, but I might have to not have the magazine in the firearm. And I don't know if this is true, but there might be states where you actually have to disassemble the firearm into its component parts, then put it in a locked box, and then make sure that the ammunition is separate. And in a state like New Jersey, you have to do all the above, but you also cannot possess jacketed hollow point or hollow point type of defensive bullets in that state. So every state is different and all that other kind of fun stuff. So this is the preface. This is the hors d'oeuvres. This is the hors d'oeuvre before the meal in the next segment. I just wanted to kind of share about gun ownership. I didn't know that open carry by a 17-year-old was legal. I did know that an adult, and by the way, this might not make any sense to you, but in America, post 2005 or 2006, and outside of California and the other unfree states, the states that have strong gun control, in every other state, including Wisconsin, an AR-15 with a 30-round magazine, one in the chamber, 16-inch or greater barrel, etc., is considered just a regular sporting rifle. It is not a weapon of war. It is not an AK-15. It is not an AK-47. It's not an M16. It is a semi-automatic, high capacity, which is not a thing. It's not a big deal in most American states. You can have 100 rounds or 50 rounds or 30 or 10 or 5 or 0. And so a sporting rifle is just a regular rifle. A regular rifle can be bought by anybody with a clear background check on their 18th birthday. So that might seem young to you, but that same person needs to be 21 or over in order to buy a pistol. So there are no special, you need to be over 25 to buy an AR-15. You have to be 18. And apparently in many states, because of hunting and so forth, you can carry, open carry, over your shoulder, you can be in possession of a rifle. And apparently there were enough adults. I don't think the law stipulates if you have to be with an adult, if you have to commit to hunting animals. I know there has to be a certain firearm length and length of barrel. But that's for all the rest of us, too. I mean, I'm 51, and if I buy a rifle that has under a 16-inch barrel, I believe, or a certain length of gun, it's considered a short barrel rifle, which is an NFA. It's licensed and tracked the way you would any type of exceptional firearm, such as a full automatic M16 or a full automatic Uzi or a full automatic or an NFA device is a suppressor. You need to have a tax stamp and be get a specific permanent license to own a suppressor, to own a short-barreled rifle, to own any other weapon, to own a short-barreled shotgun, all these other things. I mean, there's a loophole now called the AR-15 pistol, the AR-15, the AK-47 pistol, and the I guess there is a pistol version of the shotgun now, which looks basically like a sawed-off shotgun to me. Anyway, those things cannot have buttstocks, but they can have a thing called a brace. Look it up. It's amazingly. I understand why the BATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and explosives. I know why it's such a political position, because there are so many loopholes in the law now that it's all the laws against short-barreled rifles and short-barreled shotguns have now become laughing stock, because you can find ways around that to make them perfectly legal and perceived as a pistol. I get it. It's weird. I think it's cool because I like short-barreled rifles, but it's weird. All right, so let's get back to vigilantism. I know this has been a bit of a rant. I do not use notes. That might be amusing to you. That might be frustrating. Be right back. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. This is Chris Cast. My name's Chris Abraham. This is Season 3, Episode 4. I'm going to talk about vigilantism now. Someone just gave me the definition of vigilantism, and I hate I hate quoting. I really hate quoting those sorts of things. Let's see. A member of a volunteer committee organized to suppress and punish crimes summarily, as when the process of laws are viewed as inadequate. The processes of law are viewed as inadequate. Broadly, a self-appointed doer of justice. So, that is supposedly illegal. However, every single hero in all of storydom, including police and so forth, who pursue justice at the tip of a spear, at the muzzle of a gun, and pursue someone down, hunt them down, and bring them to justice with extreme prejudice. I'm not talking about necessarily people who end up in a lasso of truth and end up being left dazed and confused for the police. But even those people who are not who are left for the police to bring them to jail with a note saying "from your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man," these are still vigilantes. I mean, this perception that vigilantes are only killers is not necessarily the full ramifications of vigilantism. Vigilantism is taking the law into your own hands. One might say that Batman is not a vigilante because Commissioner Gordon or whoever it is enables him or has deputized him to do these things. But even so, the reason why Commissioner Gordon uses Batman is as a loophole and as a way of, if you will, cleaning up the city around the law. It is a loophole, and it just in the same way that Kyle Rittenhouse's personal defense against attackers is as a reason to kill his attackers are legal gray areas. I mean, personally, I believe that the verdict on Kyle Rittenhouse is completely just. I believe my only caveat and my argument with people who say that if Kyle Rittenhouse were black, it would be different, is to say that then the law is right. You're saying the law is right. You're just saying the law is not applied righteously to all peoples. So Kyle Rittenhouse should have been released without any charges, all charges dropped. And what you're saying is that the law is not equally applied to people of color. I agree. I agree that that the law applied to Kyle Rittenhouse is arguably not also fairly shared with poor people, with the mentally ill, and with, of course, minority peoples and peoples of color, especially Black Americans. So that basically is saying that Kyle Rittenhouse's defense is a gold standard upon which all other people should be held. Not Kyle Rittenhouse should be thrown to the lions, just like all other people who do not have the money, the profile, the support, etc., those people who fall through the cracks. So I don't understand. I don't understand. It's basically saying my parents were alcoholics and abusers, so you should not have a healthy, happy family because I didn't have a healthy, happy family, and we should all live in unhappy, unhealthy families. Like, that doesn't make sense. Or it could mean that, and this is what I think might be truer, is that the rule of law as it stands in America is white supremacist and ergo racist, and ergo clearly defined as a way to keep people of color down and poor people down. It is a and that is arguably possibly true. That is arguably possibly true, but I think that everybody needs to be protected. Everybody needs to have their day in court, and everybody needs to be innocent until proven guilty. And I believe that what this is saying, and I'm using judo against the people who believe that Kyle Rittenhouse was let was had a verdict in his favor, not because of the law, but because of his color. I would say that the law is completely clear. And the justice, the judge was just, and the jurors were just, and I believe that in many cases that this was the perfect example, the perfect precedent that needs to be shared around to poor people, immigrants, people of color, and especially ADOs, Black Americans, African Americans. So back to vigilantism. I mean, every movie I see is about revenge. It's about vengeance. It's about going out and hunting down someone when the law betrays you. It is they're all about from the Punisher, who is out there to go ahead and get vengeance against the people that killed his family, to my favorite Pulp Fiction novel character, Mac Bolan, who had a war against the mafia and exacted vengeance, vigilante justice against the mafia of the Northeast and in California, and eventually got the begrudging respect of the police and the people. All these stories end up with a man of the people. The vigilante becomes a man of the people. The vigilante becomes a populist prophet. The vigilante becomes a hero. The vigilante becomes a superhero. I mean, Deadpool fires guns. It used to be killing, blatantly killing people. On John Wick is a vigilante hero. John Wick might have a code. Most vigilante heroes have a co code. Do not kill women or children. Do not kill civilians. Do not. But ergo, all vigilante heroes, all vigilantes aspire to, in their perception, only exact vengeance and vigilante justice on people that they perceive as criminals. Now, who is a criminal? A criminal is only the person who is considered a criminal after the justice system gets through with him, right? And then even then, theoretically, after they serve their time in prison, that person is no longer a criminal. They might have a rap sheet, but they are not a criminal anymore. They've served their time. Now, it seems like the American public, I mean, you see this in video games, in television shows. I mean, every single one of my favorite shows, and in fact, in many cases, just so many of them have that deep down crime series. They're always fighting with their desire to go ahead. Like, there's always a dirty cop who exacts revenge. There's always, but that kind of person, people turn the other cheek. I mean, if if programming is what it says it is, which is programming, you know, television, movie, everything programming, if these are programs and they run inside your head, then for the last, you know, since at least the 20s or 30s, since I listened to serial radio shows from the 20s and 30s, I know that a big part of gumshoe, serial radio shows and other types of shows and shows like The Green Lantern and The Spirit and whatever, also a bunch of the other ones. It's always about the Green Hornet, is that right? The Green Hornet and The Spirit and all these other guys that who aren't lawyers, who are out there gunning for people, who go above and below the justice system, are all considered vigilantes, and they're American heroes, from the Marvel universe to the DC universe to Gun Fu. To John Wick, to the movie The Joker, to I don't know how many television shows. I can just think of Blacklist right now. It's all about vengeance and revenge. You know, the FBI is just being a fool or maybe being complicit. There's a lot of programming where the cops know that their hands are tied and tap a vigilante. Whether that's a former Navy SEAL, former Spetsnaz, former asset, you know, even that series that I enjoyed a little bit, the 3 days of the Condor, or whatever, ended up being, in many cases, a vengeance plot. So, I guess what I never said, and I'll say the premise at the beginning before the TLDR, my premise has always been that when I watch MSNBC, CNN, etc., fret publicly and in tears that the precedent that the Kyle Rittenhouse trial resulted in, which is you can go into a public area in a city, you know, you can go with a firearm into a riot, and you can stand around implicitly saying, I dare ya. Do you feel lucky? I dare ya. Do you feel lucky? And if the first person feels, for whatever reason, provoked enough, you know, that's the thing about provocation. If you, like, I'm a 6'3", relatively good-looking, white, 300-pound guy. And when I was a young man, I would, by virtue of going to a bar or whatever, or out to a nightlife, I could end up being picked on by a shrimp, or by a little man, or by something, by a person who just wants to prove something against me for just being there. I was never armed, I was never jacked, but I was tall, and I was, you know, good-looking enough. Like, I could be the target of that kind of targeting, especially if I was talking to pretty girls or whatever, that kind of deal, or if I was having fun or people were laughing around me or whatever. Like, there was always some jerk who wanted to come in and, you know, dominate me. Or, you know, and sometimes I fight to end the confrontation. I'm not I'm not pugnacious. I'm going to stop this at all costs. And that was never with any firearms or anything, no weapons at all. You know, but if it came to it, I would, you know, pick up a table and throw it and like knock them over the head with it, which is in fact illegal, right? Any type of assault is illegal. So none of those things are good, especially if you're carrying a weapon. But if you're going to define that they're I want to know how it can be legal and acceptable and so forth. Like, it's not like, it's not like the places that these riots are happening are hallowed land, right? If nobody has a right to riot, and also maybe nobody has a right to stand around with an AR-15. But I would say that rioting and destroying a city is as much provocation to response as is standing around with body armor and AR-15 while being white. They're all provocative acts. Staying at home and not attending a riot, or when the peaceful protest turns dark, dark as in dangerous and rife with danger, then leaving and dispersing is always a smart idea. Now that everybody's a journalist, I guess the only good stuff starts happening when the violence starts. Honestly, the panopticon and the ubiquitous cameras, including drones, who knew, and local doorbell cams and people's dash cams and their phones and their GoPros and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, means that in the future, more and more crimes will be based on visual evidence rather than hearsay or oath taking and then you know, giving your truth and so forth. He said, she said. So it will be interesting. I believe that vigilantism is. I would say that the riots in the street are vigilantism, right? Anger at the police, that's vigilante justice. Anger at the federal buildings, that's vigilante justice. Anger, I mean, it's all not allowing the system, because it's a belief that the system doesn't work anymore. All riots are vigilante justice, and opportunism and looting. Right, there's a lot of people, when a fight breaks out, there are a lot of sociopaths and psychopaths who are like, I'm going to have an opportunity to beat the shit out of someone without being held accountable for it. You know, the fog of war, all the sociopaths, psychopaths, and secret murderers come out in the fog of war. And so there's always going to be those people, which is why none of the victims of Kyle Rittenhouse's defense, none of them had a clean record. All of them had really long, really terrible criminal histories. Even the boyfriend of the green-haired girl, I would guess his name was B. Grosskreutz. Grosskreutz, and we all know that Rosenbaum was a child sex offender, and Rosenkreutz, and the guy with the skateboard was the green-haired girl's boyfriend. I forget his name, because I won't say his name. I don't believe that there are any heroes there. I believe that Kyle Rittenhouse is not a saint, is not a hero, but to the right, he is a saint and a hero. And, you know, against my better judgment, the left always, their entire suite of saints over the last 5 years have all had incredible rap sheets. So I don't know. They're not, used to be that the left would always choose people with hopeful futures who were, you know, national merit scholars and who had 4.0s and who were captain of the basketball and track team. But now everybody who is officially on the Wall of Saints are all convicted criminals. They might be, they're all, every human being is a beautiful child of God. I dare say everybody, there are beautiful children of God who have criminal histories all the time. I mean, I volunteered at Miriam's Kitchen, and I didn't only serve the needs of people without criminal histories. And I personally believe that people who come out of jail need a place to live, and they need a place to work, and they need an honorable life. I believe that do your time, do your crime, do your time, but afterwards you need to land somewhere. You need to be loved and supported. You can't be ground into the soil. I also believe that this happens to veterans as well. You know, spend them, you know, use them up in the field during their teens, 20s, and 30s, and then screw them, man, they're ruined when they get back. I don't believe that. I believe that you don't have to put a tiger down just because that tiger's tasted human flesh. I believe that all people and all animals can be rewired. That's why I'm a big proponent of pit bulls. I love pit bulls. Anyway, I'm going off the rails. I just want to say that I believe that we are imbued in a culture of violence. We are imbued. Hey, Google, what does imbued mean? Hey, Google.
Here's the def.
What does imbued mean?
Here's the definition of imbue. Inspire or permeate with, a feeling or quality.
That's good. I was going to say infused, imbued, imbibed. Hey, Google, what does the word imbibe mean?
Here's the definition of imbibe. Formal, often humorous. Drink, alcohol.
So, we're all drunk on violence. We're drunk on guns. We're also drunk on taking the law into your own hands if the law doesn't seem up for the job. It is in our DNA. It is, no, you know what? Vigilante justice goes all the way back to, in terms of the worshiping it, all the way back to the Wild Wild West. I mean, where it was perfectly okay for everybody to walk around with open carry rifles, shotguns, and revolvers, and where people would challenge other people for high noon at OK Corral, middle of the street, drawing and shooting at each other. I think that in many ways, the whole experience during the Kenosha events that resulted in Kyle Rittenhouse being taken up on charges, the entire event was very similar to the Wild West, right? Kyle went out armed. People decided they didn't like him. They didn't appreciate him being there. They didn't like the fact that he was armed, and he was not where he should have been. So each person decided to take a pop at him. And that's why they call him the Kenosha Kid. This is really and America loves Wild West analogies. They're calling him the Kenosha Kid because he was able to outdraw and outshoot all of his attackers. And in a world of that has multiple federal holidays based on winning wars, and also unofficial holidays based on the anniversaries of Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines, we live in a world that lionizes and worships armed violence. And as a result, I do agree with all y'all that this verdict coming out completely not guilty on all counts is going to embolden everyone involved. Everyone involved is going to be emboldened, and the 2022 word of the year will be vigilantism. So that's it. That's all I got. Talk to you guys soon. Aloha, mahalo, love you. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. This is Chris Cast, Season 3, Episode 4, on vigilantism. My name's Chris Abraham. I'm at chrisabraham.com. On Twitter, I'm at Chris Abraham. On Instagram, I'm at Chris Abraham. On YouTube, I'm at Chris Abraham. On Reddit, I'm at Chris Abraham. /you/ChrisAbraham, you know what I mean. On Facebook, I'm Chris Abraham. On, I believe on TikTok, I'm Christopher Abraham. On, I don't know, on, my phone number is +1-202-352-5051, and that connects you to my text, to my signal. It connects you to my Telegram, to my Messenger, and all of that. You can email me at chris@abraham.su. And also, you please give me 5 stars on your podcasting app. Please give me 5 stars or thumbs up, subscribe, and like, and click the notification bell if you're listening to this on YouTube. And if you are on any platform, please review on your app or platform and give me stars, or go out of your way to Apple Podcasts and give me a review and some stars. My home site is anchor.fm/chrisabraham, but you can find me on Spotify, Amazon. You can find me everywhere, including YouTube. So I hope you're well and talk to you soon. I'll get another episode in when I get another episode in. Mahalo.